and thank you for listening to Call the Roll, a public affairs program produced by the Columbus City Council and aired here on Freedom FM. I'm your host, John Ivanek, Communications Director for the Columbus City Council. On this week's show, growing small businesses one bite at a time, and Minority Health Month in Columbus. We begin this week with the overhaul of the code that deals with mobile food vendors, a move that will promote and protect small businesses in Columbus. Food trucks are part of the urban landscape, but have not been allowed to sell from the public right-of-way until now. Councilmember Michelle Mills, her staff, and interested stakeholders worked for nearly 2 years to craft responsible legislation that will allow food trucks to sell from busy city streets. Here's Councilmember Mills.
The process leading to this piece of legislation has been a very extensive stakeholder engaging process, and one that has been satisfying and very productive through this journey. It has not been without its challenges, but I certainly believe what I present today is a good piece of legislation that everyone can get behind. I am very pleased that all the stakeholders came together and stayed actively involved every step of the way to see today happen. There's a passionate group of people in our city that are doing great things, and for that I am grateful. Very proud of the final product. Want to thank all of the city departments, the Mills team, who've been in this process for about 2 years to reach this point. I certainly know that all the work did not go without its challenges, but certainly, again, we have a good, solid piece of legislation. It certainly achieves a solid balance between preserving public health, as many heard me talk about, the public health and the safety was extremely important while we continue to support the growing industry of mobile food vending, and certainly to help encourage economic development, it's critical to our city. The legislation is responsive and it certainly meets the needs of the industry. It takes into account the desires of our residents and our neighborhoods and their interest in growing this great business industry. I was certainly confident that we would reach this point, though there certainly was a lot of days when it was tough to get there. But as we continue to be a very welcoming and progressive city, it is certainly great that we can continue to welcome visitors and businesses and residents and offer a great food scene within our great city. The legislation is yet another way to do that to ensure the vibrancy of our city. Even today, I received additional letters in support of three of our largest stakeholders, the Central Ohio Food Truck Association, Central Ohio Restaurant Association, and the Short North Special Improvement District. I am excited to receive these letters and certainly appreciate their support throughout this process. It has been an experience that has produced a very thorough and solid piece of legislation. The newly enacted code will regulate all mobile food vendors such as food trucks, food trailers, push carts, and petty food carts. And I've certainly learned a whole new host of jargon and language related to mobile food vending through this last 2 years. In November 2012, City Council was approached about developing regulations for food trucks and other mobile food vending. The specific request was to permit mobile food vendors to operate and sell in the public right-of-way. And as I said from the beginning, with that, access to our public right-of-way, to our citizens, came with responsibility, and certainly we needed to reach a compromise as it relates to regulation. The primary goals of this effort has always been to support the industry while maintaining safety as folks interact with our residents. We are glad to see the mobile food vendors added to the fabric of our city and updating this code so we can continue to meet the needs of this industry. The food truck industry is certainly growing in Columbus, and we certainly want to be supportive not only in this city, but as they grow throughout this nation. We want Columbus to become a phenomenal food destination. All mobile food vendors are already inspected and licensed by the Health Department Chapter 523 titled Commercial Sales, which regulate commercial sales on private property and in the public right-of-way. I want to make sure that that point is understood, because as we were through this process, I did want our residents to understand that they were operating unlicensed or without any inspections. The code will provide comprehensive regulations for all those included in this legislation. It will require the licensing and inspection of all mobile food vendors operating on private property and public right-of-way by the safety department. The code will allow for them to sell from public right-of-way and regulate how they operate, and certainly streamline the application and licensing process. Representatives from City Council, the Department of Public Safety, the Department of Public Service, Columbus Public Health, and the City Attorney's Office were consistently consulted on this code as it was drafted and finalized. This was a comprehensive effort, and I want to give a thanks to all the city departments who have been in this two-year journey with us to arrive at a day to present for your consideration a very good piece and thorough piece of legislation. I believe we have speakers related to this ordinance, beginning with Laura Lee.
Good evening. Thank you, Councilmember Mills. Thank you, President Gunther, for allowing me to speak before all of you. My name is Laura Lee. I'm the owner-operator of Ajumama, one of the food trucks here in Columbus. But what most people don't know is my last semester of college I spent in the Kent State University Columbus Program in Intergovernmental Issues, taught by Representative Vernon Sykes. We attended briefings, we met with state leaders, we met with leaders of state agencies, and we learned how state government works and how it affects us, even in my industry, hospitality and food. Representative Sykes' teachings have never been more true until now when it came to the difficult task of creating new rules for the mobile food vending community here in Columbus. Many members of the community organizations, businesses, and relevant stakeholders came together and gave their input, and with the help of the hard people from Councilmember Mills' office, like Ann and Brian Clark, we have what is presented today. We look forward to continuing to work with City Council and the relevant city departments and all stakeholders to ensure that Columbus remains a premier city for mobile food. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate you as a stakeholder. And would you please share the name of your mobile food vending?
It's Ajumama.
Eat and eat often there, everyone. But I want to speak about what happens in terms of this legislation going forward. There's some other considerations that will be presented later, and first it would be the ordinance creating a code for the temporary commercial zones and permits that will be considered, and secondly an ordinance we hope for your consideration including a map to establish the congestion commercial and non-commercial zones that will be considered, and last the temporary appointments will be made to the Mobile Food Vending Advisory Board with formal appointments and elections for voted members to take place at the end of 2014. President Gunther.
Madam Chair, if I might just acknowledge you and your team. This has been a significant undertaking, complicated, and lots of different perspectives as we started down this path, but I just wanted to thank you for getting us to this point and having all the major stakeholders supporting the final proposal. So thank you.
Thank you, President Gunther. I really must thank Brian Clark again, all of the city departments, and especially Team Mills, Annie Marsico and Devin Perros, and their diligence and determination to making sure that we could solve the concerns and the challenges facing with this legislation. But again, I think it's a thorough piece of legislation. I'm looking forward to the work of the advisory board and all of those things, because as this grows, we don't pretend to have all the answers, but we certainly have the interest of the public first. And so very proud of that and very proud of this legislation.
The Columbus City Council has taken a stance on the General Assembly's effort to restrict voter access to the ballot. Council members have passed a resolution that reminds the public that successful solutions to voting problems more than a decade ago have served Ohio citizens well, and the assault on those rights by representatives and senators amounts to voter suppression. Councilmember Klein invited local campaign law expert Don McTighe to council chambers to detail many of the moves designed to limit voting options in Ohio.
Councilmember Klein, other members of council, I have, just in way of background, I've been practicing law for 36 years in Ohio, and the last 32 years, so more than three decades, have been practicing almost exclusively election law, including 8 years in the Secretary of State's office when the Secretary of State at that time was U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown. And for most of my career as an elections attorney, I'm proud to say that Ohio was sort of a leader in the country in terms of expanding the right to vote. We did that in fits and starts. It wasn't every year that, you know, legislation was passed making it easier to vote. But we made big strides, and we never went backwards. We increased, for example, we increased the right of people to vote provisional ballots. We increased the ability of people to vote absentee to the point where we have what's called no-fault absentee. And this legislation, by the way, that was passed by the Ohio General Assembly over this most of this period was both by Democrats and by Republicans. Now Ohio is a new leader. Now we are now one of the leading states in taking away the right to vote. We were a leader in expanding opportunities, and now we're a new leader in with other states such as Florida and Wisconsin and a few others in North Carolina. And even the New York Times in an editorial just a couple weeks ago did a shout out for Ohio, and it's not the kind of shout out that you want to get. It was about the efforts in Ohio to cut back on the opportunity to vote. Specifically, we have four pieces of legislation that have been enacted by the General Assembly, one last year and three just in February of this year. The legislation that was enacted in February does a lot to make it more difficult for people to vote absentee ballots. It actually and prohibits any public official, including boards of elections, from doing mass mailing of applications to registered voters to have them apply to vote by mail. I think pretty much everybody in here who is a registered voter will recall that over the last few years they've received from their board of elections requests for them, or they've received actual applications to request absentee ballots. That now is illegal unless the General Assembly makes a specific appropriation in a given year to allow that to happen. In addition, the General Assembly has enacted a number of additional requirements in terms of information that voters must provide in order to vote absentee. In other words, there are more fields of information that you have to fill out, both on the application form and then on the secrecy envelope that you mail your ballot back in. And if you don't answer precisely, you run a much greater risk of having your vote not counted. The other legislation has to do with provisional voting. Actually, the other two pieces of legislation that were enacted in February deal with provisional voting. One of them reduces the time period for provisional voting in what we call provisional voting. It reduces the opportunity to vote provisionally at the polls on election day by, again, adding additional requirements that the voter has to complete. And if the poll worker has made an error in terms of telling you where you're supposed to be and doesn't send you to the right place, you now could have your ballot not counted as long as the poll worker fills out a new mandated form. In other words, what it's doing, and I might be overcomplicating it a little bit here, but what the new legislation is doing with regard to provisional ballots is trying to shift the burden for errors that occur by provisional voters, shift that burden from poll workers to voters. But the legislation also, with regard to absentee ballots and in-person voting, either voting by mail or voting in person early at the Board of Elections, the legislation has cut back by about a week, actually about 8 days, the time period for Ohioans to vote. On top of that, we have legislation adopted last year, which hasn't received much publicity or coverage in the news, but it also is very pernicious, and that is legislation that it makes it much, much harder, much more expensive as well, for the citizens of Ohio to exercise their constitutional right to circulate and file initiative petitions proposing amendments to the Constitution or new state laws or referendums. And then finally, we have a directive that was issued by the Secretary of State in February of this year that prohibits the boards of elections from allowing voting during evening hours in person before an election. So during this early vote period, which has been reduced from 35 days to about 28, many people used to have the opportunity to vote Saturday afternoons, to vote Sundays even, and then some weekday evenings. That is, all the weekday evenings are eliminated by fiat from the Secretary of State's office, and individual boards of elections can no longer offer that. Also, no Sunday voting. Sunday voting was very popular. People would, following their service at their churches, they might all go down in a caravan or buses down to the polls, called Souls to the Polls. And it was a great opportunity to get out the vote. And in the end, what this is going to do, these changes, is it's going to make voting more difficult. First of all, you increase the risk that your vote's not going to be counted. Second, even if you do everything the right way, you're going to probably have to stand in line longer to exercise your right to vote, because that's what we've tried to do, is broaden the time period that people could vote early and make it convenient for them. And now more of those people are going to be forced back to voting on election day. And I think these are issues that people haven't felt yet because the laws haven't taken effect yet, but they're about to feel it. And we need to, I think, get the word out to people as to this type of this legislation is new. Ohio is headed in a new direction, and it's the wrong direction.
Thank you, Mr. McTighe. And Mr. McTighe, you mentioned the mass mailing of absentee ballots. There's media reporting today that in the governor's mid-biennium review, that amendment was added that any county that does not follow the new absentee ballot law, which means no mass mailings unless explicitly authorized by the legislature, then that county would, if they did break the law and send out the ballots, would receive a 10% cut in state funding to the county. So it never ceases to amaze me that these folks in the Ohio legislature will do anything to prevent, in particular, urban county, large urban county voters, from accessing the ballot box. Any questions or comments? Thank you for coming down, Mr. McTighe. I appreciate it. I'd like to hope that if there's one thing that we could rally behind as Americans, it's that we want to expand the franchise, and we want to make it easier for people to vote, not to restrict the franchise and make it harder. And that's, you know, the essence of what it is to be American, is to expand the franchise, get people to the polls, get people to vote, not to restrict it and see what we can do to create roadblocks that are going to prevent those that want to exercise the right to vote from doing so. Councilmember Tyson.
Thank you, Councilmember Klein, for putting forth this resolution. I mean, we think about our history, and people, I mean, they died for the opportunity to vote. You start thinking about our history. And so we just need to, absolutely, I'm in support of this resolution, and thank you for bringing this resolution to the council.
It is Minority Health Month in Columbus. The five goals of Minority Health Month are to provide information for individuals to practice disease prevention, to promote healthy lifestyles, to showcase resources for providers of grassroots health care and information, and to bring attention to the extremes in health conditions between Ohio's minority and non-minority populations, and to gain support for ongoing efforts to improve minority health all year round. Here's Dory Dills from Lifeline of Ohio.
On behalf of my colleagues and nearly 700 local individuals waiting for a life-saving organ transplant, I want to thank you for your support of organ, eye, and tissue donation. Lifeline of Ohio strives to bring attention to the need for increasing organ donation by asking every Ohioan to register to become an organ, eye, and tissue donor through the Ohio Donor Registry. Taking this action will allow all individuals to receive their gift of life. One donor, as mentioned, can save up to 8 lives and enhance the lives of more than 50 others. This Friday, April 11th, as part of a national initiative, Donate Life Month, Lifeline of Ohio and its supporters will be joining thousands of Americans in wearing blue and green. In addition, Lifeline of Ohio will be hosting Lifelines of Light a candle lighting ceremony to honor those who are touched by donation. We would like to invite the members of City Council as well as citizens of Columbus to join us at 7 p.m. at Lifeline of Ohio's Donor Memorial located at 770 Kinnear Road in Columbus. This month is also Minority Health Month in the City of Columbus, and although we recognize that there are individuals waiting on transplants from all different ethnicities and backgrounds, we acknowledge that the minority population is at an even greater risk for kidney disease, making them especially vulnerable to the need of a kidney transplant. In fact, the minority population makes up nearly 40% of the waiting list for a kidney. As in past years, we hope that by wearing Donate Life colors and hosting our candlelight vigil, we will draw attention to this staggering health crisis by showing the remarkable difference an organ and tissue donor can make in the lives of recipients, living donors, donor family members, and those waiting on the gift of life. As Councilwoman Tyson mentioned, every day in the United States, 18 people die waiting for an organ transplant. And last year, that amount was 170 of those right here in Ohio. These people are not waiting for a new medication or a new procedure to be developed. They're simply waiting for someone to say yes to donating the gift of life so that they may live. In closing, Lifeline of Ohio would like to thank the City of Columbus for continuing to encourage every citizen to register their decision in the Ohio Donor Registry. We hope that the Columbus citizens will make the decision and say yes and become a hero today. I'd like to now introduce V. Penn, a Donate Life ambassador, Columbus resident, and kidney recipient, to briefly share her story with you.
Council President Genther, Council Member Tyson, and members of Council, my name is V. Penn, and in 2003, I was diagnosed with kidney failure. I had just retired from the Army with 22 years of service. My daughter was graduating from high school and going to college, and I wanted to be part of that experience without the interruptions of working in the Army Reserves. I was referred to a nephrologist, a kidney specialist, and began treatment to maintain my renal function. Just like in the Army, I followed the doctor's orders, but despite my best efforts to be healthy, after 7 years, my kidneys stopped working and I was forced to go on dialysis. Unfortunately, I did not have a match or qualifying family member to donate their kidney. So I joined tens of thousands of others on the national waiting list for a transplant. I continued to work full time and I did home dialysis every night. I would connect myself to a machine about 10 o'clock every night and close the guest room door. I would not disconnect or open the door until 5 o'clock the next morning. I did my best to shield my family from my vulnerabilities because they had always known me to be a soldier. No matter how bad I felt, I did not tell my coworkers that I was on dialysis. The business place is so competitive, and I did not want to be treated any differently. You can travel and take your machine with you, but I did not want to travel. I was concerned that I would forget something, or that I would not be able to cover up the air vents. I did not want to get an infection. I have always been the one that did not want to go to sleep because I thought all the action happened at night. So I figured I would be tied to a machine, so what would be the point of going on a vacation? Again, I followed doctor's orders, I never contracted an infection, and I stayed healthy enough to remain active on the transplant list. 2.5 years later, I got the call. My transplant coordinator said, "We may have a match for you. Pack your bags and we will call you back." I called and texted the whole family and said, "Start praying." A couple of hours later, I received the word, "Come to OSU Medical Center. We have a match." I was thankful when I received the call. I was excited and I was ready for my transplant. Since my kidney transplant, a whole new world has opened up. Now that I'm free from dialysis, I've taken vacations in Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Michigan, Texas, and New York. I recently started going to hip-hop aerobics, Zumba, and boot camp classes at the local gym. I've also taken on a larger role at my workplace, and I am quick to jump in a car to go see a friend. I can now also speak freely about kidney disease and my transplant, and most importantly, my gratitude to my donor and my donor's family. I want people to know that no matter their age, religion, and or background, that they can be a registered organ donor. The oldest donor in the country was 92 years old. Organ, eye, and tissue donation only becomes an option after all life-saving efforts have been made, and your final contribution to mankind can be to save someone's life. My organ donor, my hero. On behalf of all the transplant recipients, donor families, and living donors in Central and Southeast Ohio, I'd like to thank the City of Columbus for their support of organ, eye, and tissue donation.
We're out of time for this edition of Call the Roll. If you have a question or a comment, please email us at calltheroll@columbus.gov. That's callthe@columbus.gov. Don't forget to follow the Columbus City Council on our Facebook and our Twitter pages. On behalf of the entire Columbus City Council, I'm your host, John Ivanek. Thanks for listening to Freedom FM, and have a great weekend.